Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Nina West is an American drag queen who rose to international prominence on the 11th season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Other notable credits include playing Divine in Weird the Al Yankovic Story, dragging the classics, The Brady Bunch playing Alice, and voiceover work for Nickelodeon's Blue Clues, Baby Shark's Big Show, RuPaul's Secret Celebrity Drag Race, the recent RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 9, Drag Me to Dinner, Bobby Moynihan's Lofi, Hulu's The Bravest Night, and documentaries Ladylike and Kings, Queens, and Inbetweens. On stage, he starred as Edna Turnblatt on the national tour of Broadway's Hairspray the Musical. Nina has hosted events around the world. Of note, the 74th Annual Ace Eddie Awards, Disney Plus Pride Special, events at San Diego Comic-Con, Disney's D23 Fan Expo for Disney Vacation Club, and galas for Sage and Bring Change to Mind, among many others. She has published 2 books. Her children's picture, The You Kind of Kind, was published in 2022 by PA Press. And No Tea, No Shade, The Life of a Drag Queen, a collection of essays by 6 drag artists, including Nina, was published in 2025. Nina has performed with Kermit the Frog and the Muppets, and in 2025 she'll be seen in the film Tina Romero's Queens of the Dead. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Nina West.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm so good. You find me today in Columbus, Ohio, where it's where I'm based and it's where I live. But I've been on the road pretty nonstop the last several months.
The audience or the public think that it's very glamorous to be on the road, you know, doing this type of work. But as we know, it's not that glamorous. It's in and out of hotels. It's in and out of costumes. It's in and out of trains, planes, automobiles. How do you personally maintain sort of balance during that period?
Oh my gosh. When I'm on the road, I journal a lot more than I typically do when I'm at home. I read a lot of books on the road, mostly like through my Kindle because I can't carry around everything, right? Because it's it's too much to carry. But I also just try to stay in touch with friends back home or in the cities that they might find themselves, just to kind of like have a basis of, you know, kind of like some grounding and kind of some normalcy, because being on the road is tough. Sure, it is. It can be glamorous. Oh my gosh. You can meet fabulous, wonderful people, and you go to wonderful parties after the show, and you know, you're meeting wonderful fans all over the country and all over the world. But it is, it comes with its own challenges. You're away from your friends and your family. You're living on a tour bus, which is glamorous. I mean, you work really hard to have something like this, but it comes with its own challenges.
I've always wondered, especially with the wardrobe that you have as part of being Nina West, is quite extravagant, is quite big. How do you travel with that wardrobe?
Luckily I have the ability, the tour travels all of our wardrobe for us. And so like we walk in, our suitcases or our gondolas filled with our wardrobe and our costumes and our wigs are all there. We have a wonderful, you know, help and assistance from the tour production team who help us get our dressing rooms ready, right? Every single night we're in a different city. So it does require a lot of people to have all hands on deck, and we couldn't do it without every single hand. It's not just the fabulous queens on the road. And so it allows us the opportunity, I think, to, you know, not be so stressed about, you know, where everything's going to go or live on a tour bus because it's not that big. But you know, so you know, you keep it real tight sometimes, because you can only travel so much and you can only have so much with you on the road. And I like to push those limits. I like to see how many wigs I can take, how many costumes I can take, how much variety can I have on the road. Yeah, the tour does make it easy when they travel on the trucks for us, which is really nice.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether at child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this creative world. And how did that journey progress?
Oh my God, it started for me really young. I think I can't remember what it necessarily was. I think I saw a production of Cats on tour in Cleveland, Ohio, when I was a kid with my dad. And I think I had a realization that, like, oh, wait, people can do this for like a living? Like, this, you can, like, not living, but like, people do, like, the people do this. I don't know if I had an understanding of what a living was, but like, people do this? And I think I was bitten by the bug. I can be a cat. I could be a dog. I could be, you know, like whatever it was. And there was a lot of love. I don't know. The Muppets were a big influence, are still a huge influence on me in the films of Disney. Just kind of like, you know, like the Shaggy Dog. I was just like kind of this, there was a certain part of my life and an understanding that, oh, wait, someone does this and they do this. This is what they do. Maybe I could do this. So I was bitten really quite early. I'd say like 4 or 5 years old. And I remember doing a church play, a nativity. It was like kind of the first time. And I think it was just in the background as like a extra shepherd. I don't remember what. Maybe an extra wise man. There were more than three. I don't remember. You know, my first role was in the nativity. But then I really wanted to do the high school plays and musicals. And I did. And then I wanted to major in theater in college. And I did. And the drag of it all came about really haphazardly and accidentally, because I wasn't like trying to be a drag queen. I was just wanting to perform. And the person who became my drag mother, Virginia West, who came into my life, was like, you know, you can kind of combine all of these things of theater and storytelling and you can make that drag. And that was kind of like a revolutionary thought to me. It's like, oh, wait, I can do this too? Like, you know, I was like, I was kept getting the awareness that, you know, people were giving me permission, and it's like, wait, yeah, I can do this and I should do this. Why am I not doing this? And so that's how it all kind of happened. Not really. I mean, there's so many more details.
So how did you choose the name Nina West? Where does that come from?
Nina Simone was and is my favorite singer. And so when I was in college, I loved Nina Simone so much that that's where I took my name from. And Virginia West is my drag mother, and I took her last name and put it together. So Nina West.
Having the concept of the idea of saying, oh, I can do this, and then actually starting to do it, were there any aspects about doing drag that surprised you that you did not realize would be part of the process?
Oh my God, it's so expensive. It is like, it is very expensive, and it is, drag queens are the every person, right? They're producers, writers, directors, hairstylists, costumers. It requires you to cultivate and develop all of those skills in some fashion or another to really do, I think, drag and to do it well. And I think, like, it's like, it is, I think, the greatest, maybe most challenging art form, you know, because it does require you to have some of those things, all of those things to do it well. And like, you can't just phone it in. It's like, you know, it's like a comedian is, you know, good comedians and they're bad comedians, and good comedians have it. And, you know, there's good drag and there's bad drag, and good drag, they just have it. But man, I was really surprised at how expensive it was.
Do you get your clothes made or do you make them yourself?
Okay, look, first of all, I don't know if you've seen me on RuPaul's Drag Race not doing well at any sewing challenge. Although an all-star thought I was going to win the second sewing challenge. I really thought I did well. And I think the tide felt like that too. But anyway, I have everything made for me because A, I don't have, it's just not my skill set. Like, I can do it. I don't do it well. So, you know, like, I'm not going to spend my time doing something like that where I don't do it well. Because things that I do well, I'm great with concepts. I'm great with writing. I'm great with, you know, there's a lot of other things I do really well. And so I spend my time on those things. And then I have stuff made for me because, you know, it frees me up to do these other things that I think are really important.
How much input do you have in the design of the clothes? Are you fully involved or does the person who make them say, oh, how about this?
I think it depends on what it's for, right? So if it's for a red carpet for an event that's really specific, I will go in really specific. I'll be like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. This is the style. If it's for a number that I have or a performance that I have in mind that is very stylized, conceptualized, and designed, I will go in with a specific idea. But I work with some really incredible, brilliant designers. Designers like David Dalrymple, who is excellent at me coming in and saying, okay, I think I need something that is going to be in this style or in this vein. And I really want it to give kind of an ode to Broadway. And David will take a day or take a beat and come back with some sketches and be like, here's this idea. And I'm playing with these things. And I'm playing with this line. And I'm playing with this silhouette. And I'm playing with this story. And it'll be like everything I never thought of and everything I could have ever wanted and only had seen at some point in my life in the dream. You know, like I try to surround myself with kind, talented people who are inspired by the work that I do and allow me to be inspired by the work that they do. So some of these designs and pieces that I wear are either really collaborative or sometimes the designer is saying, I think you should wear this. I want you to wear this. I think this would look great on you. And it does the favor of keeping me in my aesthetic that I love, but also pushing me to try new things.
Okay, so what was the inspiration and inclination to enter RuPaul's Drag Race?
Oh my gosh. Well, I had auditioned 9 times. So I think, you know, the 9th time when I finally got on the show, Michelle Visage was ringing in my ear on my 8th audition and was like, why? Who is this person I'm seeing in these audition tapes? That's not you. Where are you? Who are you? Why aren't you bringing yourself? Why am I not seeing the person that I know in these audition tapes? And so when I auditioned that 9th time and I was just my authentic self, and then my goal was to just bring my authentic self to Drag Race, you know, and like that was, and for good, bad or ugly, honey, I, you know, it was all authentically me. I'm really proud of that, you know? So I think my goal was just to be myself. And that's really hard when you walk into a workroom and you've never had cameras on you before, like in this setting, and you've never, you know what I mean? You've never been around that environment. That can be challenging to negotiate and navigate mentally.
The previous times that you auditioned, were you trying to be a different version of yourself?
No, I think, you know, what's funny is I think I was trying to be like what they had just, a version of myself that was the closest thing to what they had just crowned. So like if it was Bob Drag Queen, it was like, oh, right, they're looking for a comedian. They want somebody who's really funny. Let me give an audition where I'm like really focused on that. Oh, it's Jinx, you know, oh, they want, you know, camp Broadway, Broadway focus, Broadway forward, standard, you know, like a Broadway standards, kind of like a musicality cabaret kind of queen. Let me focus on that version of myself. Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I saw what they were crowning. I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's how the show worked. Not understanding that, oh, those people are winning because they're themselves. From every winner, from regular seasons to All-Stars, you know, you can go from Jinx or Bianca or Alaska or Bob or Angeria or Evie Oddly, whoever it is, right? Everyone's just being their authentic selves, and that's why they've done well on the show and they do well in their careers, because that's, people want to see you. And that's, I think, why I do well in my career and do well at what I do, is because I'm just being myself.
You referenced that it took you a moment to get used to the cameras, because naturally when people are in front of cameras, they put a version of themselves that, because there's a camera there, because they think, oh, I need to put on this portrayal of myself.
I think that definitely happens. Reality TV is not real. I don't go to the grocery store and have a team of 10 cameras following me. You know what I mean? Or I don't wake up in the morning and there's a camera in my face. Like that's, so when you walk in a workroom in the environment, or you're on The Amazing Race and you're competing from city to city, or you're on Real Housewives, and it's just, that's, of course people are putting out a version of themselves, whether they know it or not. Yeah. I mean, so like, I think that's a challenge in and of itself, because you're like, I'm negotiating this here while I'm also experiencing this in real time. But I also think conversely, right now, we're now going into the 18th season of Drag Race, and queens have what grown up. Basically, the people who are auditioning now are probably 18 years old, and they've grown up, you know, watching this show. So they have an idea of what, you know, they're playing to the camera. They have, like, you know, which I didn't grow up with this in my home, or I think I've played it differently. And, you know, like there is a little bit of, I think, playing to the camera that's happening now, because people are more savvy and are smarter at how, like, right, okay, like this can get me this. And I think Drag Race should be somewhat treated transactionally, in that you should be able to go on the show and be like, this is my goal, for this is why I want to do this show. Some people just want to be famous. Some people just want to have followers on their social media accounts. Some people want to use it to leverage into the next chapter of their career in this industry. And I think the relationship with the show should be transactional. If you're going to give yourself to that, you should have in mind what you want out of it. And I think that's fair and reasonable.
for people to go and doing. And I think these newer generations of kids who are auditioning for the show and getting on the show, I think they've recognized that, where I think a lot of previous seasons or participants like myself didn't necessarily realize the full potential with which they could say, I don't know, how do I go into this experience before and prepare myself for what could come next?
I understand what you're saying. What aspects of it actually surprised you while you were actually doing it?
That would surprise me. I was surprised by how long you shoot for. I was just surprised that you're on the runway for those deliberations for as long as you are. Because, you know, when you're watching, it's like all so quick. And it's like, oh my gosh, you're here forever. I was surprised by the camaraderie and joy that I received from my fellow contestants that I competed with on season 11. I was surprised by how well I did on the season. I was surprised by the people's reaction to me, the positive reaction towards me on season 11. A lot of it caught me off guard because I was like, you just don't know, because you know, when you're the contestant, you're not on the side of, you don't get to see the edit. You don't get to see, you don't know how it's going to all play out until you see it on TV with the rest of the world. And so that alone was a surprising experience. You know, I think it's all surprising because it was all new to me. It was all very foreign to me, but it was also wonderful. It was challenging and wonderful.
And obviously it helped catapult your profile, your career, and you as an artist. When I was reading your profile, I read that you've also been as Edna Turnblatt in Hairspray and various other different characters, such as Divine in the Weird Al Yankovic movie. When you're portraying other characters like those, how much of Nina is in those characters?
Oh my gosh, it's hard not to. Nina is Andrew. Andrew is Nina. Nina is Edna. Nina is Divine and Weird, right? There is it's impossible not to at least bring some of that, whether or not it's not Nina. I don't want that to be misunderstood. But like my experience in the world of drag and my experience as Andrew, all of those experiences lead me to be able to bring those kinds of iterations of versions of people to life, right? So my Divine is an homage to Divine. It's also very much Nina, Andrew or Nina, or like there is so much of what I've learned. Pulling faces on stage gets me a laugh. Learning how to negotiate the camera to play towards my strengths. All my experience, my education in this world has taught me those things. So yes, literally there is a little bit of Nina present, but also yes, figuratively, without Nina, I would not have been able to do those things because of all the things I've learned through her and doing having the work that I've had.
Quick question back to RuPaul's Drag Race. How much impact do you feel that it has had on society and culture to bringing the artistry of drag to the world and more front and center?
It's a pop culture juggernaut. I mean, there are few things and institutions and shows and also interchangeably people who have shifted the conversation and the zeitgeist surrounding something so specifically artistic like drag, such as RuPaul and RuPaul's Drag Race and the team at World of Wonder, Fenton Bailey, Randy Barbato, Tom Campbell. Those people have been instrumental in changing how we as a nation and in turn a world consume and participate in the art form of drag. I think anyone who denies that has a full grasp on the reality of the situation. I think you and I would not be sitting here today if it weren't for RuPaul and for RuPaul's Drag Race. I would not have the ability to have this interview with you. Or conversely, I wouldn't have played Edna Turnblatt or Divine or be in the new Tina Romero movie if I didn't have the exposure that I had in RuPaul's Drag Race. And I think that's important to understand, right? Like Ru and the World of Wonder family have created a giant legacy. And for better or for worse, right? You know, like I was actually having this conversation earlier today in another interview I did where
you used to be able to go around the country and kind of know where you were regionally around the country with drag. You'd be like, oh, I'm in Texas. Look at this Texas hair, these pageant queens. There was like an identity and a personification to the drag regionally. And because we didn't have things like social media and we didn't have a show like RuPaul's Drag Race, so we didn't have YouTube, you know? So like when you would travel, you'd be like, oh, I'm in New York City. Look at these cabaret queens. They sing live. You would get a sense of the city you were in or the state you were in by the entertainment you would find in nightlife. And because of like this mass connectability that we have, right? Through cell phones, through television, through television shows like RuPaul's Drag Race, right? We've been able to kind of have the same exposure and language to things. So drag has become a little watered down in that it's all very much kind of the same place. And my hope is that people use things like Drag Race and Dragula to inspire them to be like, yeah, I can do this, and not to fall into the trap of, oh, I can do that. There was some excitement and, you know, the Wild West of it all, the danger of it all, to not necessarily know what kind of drag you would get when you'd walk into a nightclub, you know, and you'd be like, whoa, okay, this is like underground club drag. This is, right? I mean, and you can't really define it all. There was a time where you couldn't define drag as any kind of type. And some of that is, I think there is like a natural progression of people kind of responding to the popular nature with which drag, you know, how drag has become a part of such a major part of pop culture. I think there's this natural now progression towards people kind of like, again, as we do naturally, kind of like, you know, bucking the system a little bit, kind of breaking the mold a little bit, trying to see where they're pushing boundaries again, seeing how far they can go with something. And that's exciting and really wonderful. And again, is a part of the next kind of renaissance of what drag is going to be. Because we're in the middle of one and there'll be another one.
From sitting as you are now at the moment, for the listener, Nina is out of drag, to being stage ready.
How long does that take you?
Too long. I'm a big man, you know. I like to give myself 2 hours start to finish, just to do what I want to do and have the time with myself to, you know, start and stop an audiobook or to, you know, just kind of like just to putz and play. So 2 hours.
What's coming up next? You referenced the movie, and I know you're going to be on tour and stage over the next few weeks, so tell us where we can see and what all the shows are about.
I'm in the brand new Tina Romero movie, Queens of the Dead. Tina Romero is the daughter of the godfather of the zombie genre, George Romero. And this is her first feature film. And it's a gigantic love letter to her father and to the genre, through which she is queering the canon. The film stars Jaquel Spivey, Katie O'Brien, Margaret Cho, Cheyenne Jackson, Ricky Lindholm, Jack Haven, Tomas Matos, myself. It's just this wonderful, queer, fabulous, Dominique Jackson, this wonderful, fabulous, like kind of queer extravaganza. And then you'll be able to watch it on Shudder this November. And then I'm also going to be touring the country in Murray and Peters' A Drag Queen Christmas, hosting the tour again. For my fifth or sixth time, I can't remember how many times I've hosted. But I'm honored to be back at the helm with, I think, the greatest drag tour that hits the country. And it's at the most perfect time of year, the holiday season. It's my favorite time of year. It's my favorite time to be on the road because you get to see the country and all of its wonder and beauty and truly more of a majestic warmth over all of us. And especially in these times, it's nice to have a little bit of light and love and warmth passed around, especially for LGBTQIA+ people. So this is a really wonderful show to come out and celebrate with friends. We're hitting 39 different markets all across the country. We start in Detroit. We move around the East Coast. And then the beginning of December, we hit the West Coast from everywhere from San Diego all the way up to Seattle and then everywhere in between. And throughout December, we hit Texas in the middle of the country and make our way to Florida and then back up to Michigan before we end at the new year. So if people want to see the show, and I think they should, it's got an incredible cast. We've got Bosco, Susie Toot, Shea Coulee, Lydia Collins, among many others, Lexi Love. You can get your tickets at dragfans.com and come see us for the holiday season.
So basically, it's a festive season type show. Is that correct?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes, we're decking the halls. We're ringing the bells. We're jingling our jangle. We're making our way across the country.
Okay, so now what's the difference for you in your personal experience about headlining and being on your own show compared to being on a show with other artists?
It's night and day, because what I love about being on the tour, especially the Christmas tour with other artists, is that the holidays can be tricky and they can be tough for especially queer people. You know, they can be really isolating and alone. And it's nothing better than being on the road with all these other wonderful, creative, brilliant people and sharing in this experience and kind of creating our own little found chosen family for 6 weeks. I mean, because it's grueling work. It's hard work. You get up and you wake up in one city, you go to bed, and then you wake up in another city. I mean, it's like bus, another club, bus, no sleep. It is just magical. And, you know, when you're tour alone, you're like really kind of in charge of everything. And you're calling the shots in a very different way. And the tour with a collective group of wonderful people, you are all experiencing something really magical together, and you're all co-headlining and sharing in the glory of it all. And it's just a lot of fun.
I saw that you were on and you mentioned that you love the Muppets. What other intentional goals do you have that you'd like to manifest that we're going to get through?
Oh my God, you're so sweet. You know, I would love to do more work in film and television. I'd love to do some voiceover work as an actor and, you know, create my own character for Disney. I think that would be lovely. I would love to make my Broadway debut. I've toured with a Broadway show around the country, but I've never been a part of an ensemble and a cast on a Broadway stage. And that's, I think, the biggest dream of mine that I would love to see realized. That's the big one. You know, I think that there is, there's so many things I've been so grateful and lucky to accomplish in my career, especially when you really put into context that I've only really had this big, big career for the last 6 years since season 11. You know, like it's only been 6 years and I've been able to accomplish so much in that very short period of time. But my really hope that, you know, I'm a big dreamer and I don't want it to end anytime soon, because I love it all so much and I love creating and I love the energy that I receive and the ability to give what I have in me to others. I just love it. And if I could do that on the Broadway stage eight shows a week, that would make me the happiest. So hopefully one day.
Okay. Let's not say hopefully. Let's say one day it'll happen and then we'll prove it out there. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Hey, you know, wherever you might be listening, and however you're receiving this podcast, I just want to remind you, especially if you're queer, LGBTQ joy, queer joy is valuable and it's vital. And I think in these really dark times, I hope that you are giving yourself permission to experience and have queer joy, that you're not alone. We are all in this together, and that our resistance and our joy will get us through all of these dark times. And I think that there are just light ahead. That's what I believe it. I see it. I have to know that. I have to believe that. You know, I appreciate you listening, and I hope that you have heard something you've liked, and I hope that you'll continue to follow me on my own journey and continue to let me be a part of yours. So thanks for tuning in today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.